You are flying high on Locked On Eagles, your source for the best Philadelphia Eagles news and analysis, brought to you by LockedOnEagles.com. I am your host, Michael Kist. You can follow my X&O work for InsideThePylon.com. Follow my draft and fantasy work for BreakingFootball.com. Follow me on Twitter at MichaelKistNFL. As always, I am joined by the doggone best co-host in the game, Mr. 7-Year Streak Without a Bad Day. He is Benjamin Solak of Bleeding Green Nation. Does his draft work for NDT Scouting. You can follow him on Twitter at Benjamin Solak. That's S-O-L-A-K. Ben, how you doing, brother?
Every day is a good day to be alive, Mike. I was telling Mike before the show, we got to have a talk about this. College football national championship going to kick off in less than an hour here, I believe it is. Mm-hmm. I will not be seeing the game tonight, which is very upsetting. Obviously, I'd love to see it. Sometimes like these national like championships, these big games get blown out of proportion for me a little bit. You know, it becomes too much of a spectacle. Like halftime performance by Kendrick Lamar is a little much for me as far as... you know, unpaid college football players, but we won't get into that. Either way, I'm very upset that I won't be seeing it and everything, but I'm excited for it. It's going to be a good night. I'm excited to see what comes out of it. Obviously, Kirby v. Saban is a great storyline.
Yeah. Are you DVRing it? Are you watching it later tonight, or are you just out for today?
Yeah. So, Mike, if you look around, you'll see that I'm a college student who does not even have a TV on which I could DVR a thing, man. Like, I do not have step one of, like, the five-step process that is DVRing.
Oh, man. That is harsh. Okay. Some of the things that we are going to talk about today, we're going to talk about some of the coach poach things going down with the Eagles, mm-hmm. as far as DeFilippo, Schwartz, all that good stuff. We're also going to talk some Julio Jones against the Eagles, maybe revisit that 2016 game where we got a W over the Falcons when they were the hottest offense in the league. Let's get into some stuff here, because Jim Schwartz was set to interview with the Giants, and then I guess they couldn't work out a schedule leading into this game that the Eagles have. So they're set to interview after the season is officially over for Philadelphia. Depending on how they see Eli's future and if they're looking to invest their first pick in drafting a quarterback, the Giants could really go any direction with this. As far as why they would be interested in Schwartz, this is a defense that went from second in team defense, according to Football Outsiders DVOA, in 2016 to 21st in 2017. They also ranked 30th in sacks after ranking 11th last year, 23rd in takeaways after ranking 16th, 28th in scoring defense compared to 2016's 4th overall finish, 22nd in third down conversion percentage compared to last year's 3rd ranked finish, and another big one, in 2016, they were first in the league in red zone defense, 18th this year. So they saw a significant drop off in literally every important defensive category imaginable. Real quick, other candidates that they have already interviewed: Vikings offensive coordinator Pat Shurmur, who Philly fans will know well, and two Patriots offensive coordinator Josh McDaniels, who we actually put with them when we did our fix a franchise episode in the middle of December with the Giants. Also, they interviewed defensive coordinator Matt Patricia for the Patriots. Word is former Panthers GM and new Giants GM Dave Gettleman has set up an interview with current Panthers defensive coordinator Steve Wilks as well. Ben, what do you think about these candidates?
Yeah, firstly, we're very smart with Josh McDaniels, so go us. High five there. It does interest me a great deal, actually, that Steve Wilks has not come on as a stronger candidate there for Giants. I would assume Dave Gettleman kind of strikes me as the guy who would like to bring in some familiarity. That just seems to kind of be his way. That's a gut feeling. Like, you know, I don't have, you know, like historical trends or anything on that. The field is leading as far as the odds go for the Giants head coaching job. Behind that, McDaniels, Schwartz, and then Wilks are kind of the three leaders. I was talking a little bit to Jean Barchard, a friend of the podcast of Bleeding Green Nation, about this earlier. It's very interesting to me the number of defensive minds that the Giants have brought in. Schwartz, like you brought up, Matt Patricia, even though Matt Patricia looks to be going over to the Lions now, that's kind of, you know, that's not set in stone yet. Obviously, there's right. No ink to the page, but that seems to be verbally agreed upon. And then obviously, Steve Wilks will be a serious candidate. It's very interesting to me, you know, Gettleman said when he was brought on that his vision was a two-year rebuild with Eli Manning at the helm. That's right. Where his head is right now, which, you know, obviously he, GM, the owner, John Mara, and then the head coach, whoever that ends up being, they all have to get on the same page with that.
Yeah.
But it'll be very interesting to see who's willing to tie themselves to a two-year success period with Eli Manning at the helm, having seen the way that offense works. And if you're thinking, okay, 2 years, rebuild, play with Eli, well, that offense has a lot of pass catchers. right? Yeah. It's got a pretty decent rotation of backs. You're okay with it, I guess. I'd still like to see a piece added, but it's decent.
Do you think they feel that, you know, with Odell not being there this season with the injury, that the main fix they could do, because Eli's a known quantity, and rather than blow it all up and build everything with a new quarterback, if they can get that defense back to where it was last year, and then you have Odell healthy, and maybe add a piece in the running game, do you think that's how they're kind of seeing things? Like, the offense isn't really broke because it wasn't healthy all season?
When it comes to that, the offensive side of the roster, you could convince yourself, I don't think you could convince me, but yeah, one could convince oneself that you really just need to bring in a solid offensive coordinator, a veteran sort of a guy who knows what he's doing, and you can get that offense producing pretty well. And then remember, in recent memory, the Giants have won Super Bowls on the backs of very, very good defenses.
Yeah.
That's been the winning formula for them. So that's what's there in Mara, the owner's head. And so him bringing in potentially a defensive-minded sort of a guy and then really rejuvenating that defense, which I think needs a lot more attention from a personnel perspective. Dave Gettleman has done a great job. That was his greatest success in Carolina, was accumulating front seven talent,
yeah,
right, as on the defensive side. So you bring in Gettleman to do that. You bring in a coach who can deploy it, which I would assume would be Steve Wilks. That would be my first thought, but again, right, that hasn't come to fruition yet, which kind of surprised me a little bit. So you go ahead and do that. Okay, that's your two-year formula, looking at it from the outside. Again, you can convince yourself of all of that. I remain very unconvinced that this will be successful, and I think they'll be back in the market quite quickly looking for a guy to work with a quarterback. So to me, I think Steve Wilks has to be the favorite still, even though, you know, nothing's really come out of that. Obviously, Carolina just came out of a playoff game, and so they haven't had the chance yet to interview him because he's preparing for the wild card matchup. I think the other guy to watch out for, you know, I don't think it's going to be Jim Schwartz. Matt Patricia's out. Obviously, it's not Steve Spagnuolo. I think then Pat Shurmur is the other guy that I'm interested in because I think, you know, while McDaniels is a good offensive name and there are a couple more out there, Shurmur is a very like steady, well-known offensive commodity. He can come in and get like at least middle of the pack offensive production out of that offense. And I think that's all they're really looking for. Like, that's all they feel like they need. So those are my thoughts on the Giants head coaching search. Regardless of what it is, I think they'll be back in the market in 2 to 3 years. If they think they can continue to win with Eli, yeah, 2020, we're going to be talking about Giants head coaching search again.
Yeah, I definitely would agree there. And one thing to note with Dave Gettleman, not just with the coaching search, but the way he constructs his team, is he's known as one of the more honest GMs. When he says something, typically that's exactly how he's feeling. So that might give you a hint as how he wants to draft, how he wants to build through free agency. So that's something that we're going to be tracking as well. And we're going to talk some Joe Douglas, some Flip, right after I tell you that please go to iTunes if that's where you're getting us, or whatever podcast app you're using. But if you use iTunes, give us 5 stars, rate, review, leave your Twitter handle in the review. We will enter you to win a free PFF Edge subscription, which is worth $40. Really helps the show, and we really appreciate it. So, Ben, the Houston Texans made a request to interview Joe Douglas, Eagles vice president of player personnel, for their general manager vacancy. The Eagles denied it.
Yeah, we said heck no.
Yeah, exactly. Now, how do you see this playing out? Because this could kind of chaff his butt a little bit as far as us denying him the potential for advancement. Do you see something like maybe some extra compensation for Douglas, maybe a formal title of general manager while you bump Howie Roseman up to something else as well? Or how do you see that kind of playing out?
Very interesting. I'm going to be very curious to see what happens, because for every bit that you want to give Douglas kind of a titular boon, you also have to remember that I think Howie will be quite triggered by any sort of renaming or reshuffling, because not so long ago, feels long ago, because it's like an era ago, right? Because of like the coaches and the quarterbacks, but not so long ago, Howie was, oh, we're going to reshuffle you around and change your title, it's going to be fine. And then next year, Chip Kelly was the general manager, right?
Doing like, it again.
Yeah, so I think Howie will be very, very tentative of that. Now, when it comes to denying Joe Douglas the Texans position, I will say this, and this is kind of an umbrella take I have on all sorts of musings about front office and general manager and player personnel decisions, and just it's a very general thing. We really don't know. It's so often we want to attribute, this was Howie's pick, this was Douglas's pick. Oh, you know, Alshon came over because he had the history with Douglas and everything.
Right.
Everything, and like this is such a blanket, pointless statement, everything is piecemeal. Everything is part of somebody, especially when it comes to front offices, and especially one that's designed like Philadelphia's, where the responsibilities that you would say this is a GM's job are fractured between Howie Roseman and Joe Douglas. They are, right? Like they both do GM-y sort of things. Howie is called the GM. He's also called the, like, the executive vice president or whatever it is. I don't know, right? And then Joe Douglas is VP, PP, vice president of player personnel, right? All sorts of nonsense. And so the key for Philadelphia is not titles. It's not, you know, obviously pay grade is big to the gentleman, but keeping the stability between Howie and Joe and keeping the same people there is what's important. We can sit here as much as we want, very intimate with the team, and say, oh, you know what? Danelle Pumphrey was probably a Joe Douglas pick because we know that Joe Douglas loves production and Danelle Pumphrey was a record producer and so on and so forth, right? But the fact of the matter is nobody, like Joe Douglas didn't punch out Howie in the war room and run Danelle Pumphrey to the podium while Howie was like dragging at his heels, right? Like everything is a community decision. They're all going to put that out there into the media. They're all going to say, oh, it's all a team decision. And it for our understanding, it is. And so it's very difficult. You know, a lot of people say, oh, promote Douglas to GM, Howie, like, put him somewhere else, right? No, keep everything the way that it is. The best characteristic of a front office is not aggressiveness in trades. It's not experience in personnel and scouting. It's stability.
Right.
It's great. And, like, look at teams like Oakland. Look at teams like Green Bay, who there's the Ravens, who these are teams that draft very, very well. Oakland, not recently, the last couple years, but historically draft very, very well. Kansas City is, you could argue, another one, like, that's recently coming out.
Yeah.
Homegrown talent that just stays in the front office and they keep people there for as long as they can. And when they have positions, they just move people up within the organization. Front office is all about stability, familiarity. Everybody is there. They know how the organization works. They know the ethos. They know the system, and they all work as a unit, right? And so I think that Philadelphia has a very real path to keeping Joe Douglas here for a long time, very happy. And I think teams will try to continue to interview him for GM positions for as long as his title doesn't say GM. But Joe Douglas came here in what appeared to be a lateral move title wise,
right?
But has clearly more influence over personnel than he did when he was in Chicago, right? And I think that you have, there's a real path where you can keep him happy with that for a long time. Now, if Howie starts to get frustrated and he wants to be more involved in personnel, then you're in trouble. But still, stability is king, and I love stability.
I 100% agree with you there. There's no reason to panic and make a move. We obviously don't know how Joe Douglas feels about this personally. They could have reached out and Joe Douglas could have said, no, I don't want to interview with them, because that happens in some situations. And it looks like the team shuts it down. It's actually the person shutting it down.
Yeah, and let's not forget that you got in Houston a coach in Bill O'Brien, who I love, B.O.B., and he's a great offensive mind, but he was at war with the previous GM. Right? Yeah. You do not want to step into a situation where the previous GM and the previous head coach were battling, and then the Rick Smith, the GM with the Texans, stepped away for family reasons. His wife is very sick, and, you know, all prayers go out to her and everything. But I can guarantee you, Bill O'Brien, whoever the next GM of the Texans is, or the temporary GM or whatever it is, O'Brien's going to start trying to stake his territory on day one. You don't necessarily want to step into that situation. It's a very good point, Mike.
Definitely agree there. Okay, let's go to a look back at the 2016 game of the Falcons against the Eagles, which the Eagles won 24-15. Julio Jones, man, we talked about it yesterday. This is Julio Jones' career stats against the Eagles. First game, 2 receptions, 29 yards. That was back in like 2011, 2012. Next game, 5 receptions, 123 yards and a touchdown. Next game, 9 receptions, 141 yards and 2 touchdowns. And then last year, 10 receptions, 135 yards and a touchdown. We talked about the possibility of maybe Ronald Darby traveling around with Julio Jones. One of the things that makes that hard, and we saw this last year, is that Julio Jones plays a quarter of his snaps in the slot. And when that happened last year, you had Malcolm Jenkins covering him, and he actually had a key breakup on a fourth down that put the Eagles in a very good position to win. So he did very well against Julio, only allowing 2 catches from the slots for like 35 yards or something like that, or 25 yards. Jalen Mills, I thought, played really well against Julio. And there were just some passes that were put exactly where they needed to be. There was one along the sidelines against Nolan Carroll. There was a deep crosser that Mills was there for. There was a quick slant that Mills was there for as well. I'm going to have those videos up on LockedOnEagles.com fairly soon. I'll have a breakdown of how Mills played against Julio, with a little Malcolm Jenkins bonus. But the one thing that I'm seeing online already, and we've been dealing with it all year, is, oh, we want to see more 2 safety, which is great in theory. that's not who the Eagles are. That's not what their defense is, especially on early downs. And I didn't see it last year either, and we kind of kept everything in front outside of that one Taylor Gabriel double move, by the way, Taylor Gabriel touchdown on Leotis McKelvin. And they set that up beautifully. I actually have that up on my Twitter. If you go to Michael at Michael Kiss NFL, you can see it on there. I broke that down over a minute. But we're going to play single high, and I'm not going to blame Jim Schwartz for playing with what works. That helps the run defense be so stout, be what it is. And if we had to play too high all the time, like I've said before on this show, I think that's a coward's defense, and you're begging to get run on all over. Ben, what did you see? What do you see from that last game that might translate over into this year?
Right. I'll go the other side. I'll take it from the Philadelphia offense.
Nice.
Because the reason that game went the way it did, which Philadelphia was not supposed to beat the eventual NFC Super Bowl representatives, because Philadelphia was kind of shaky at this time, they ran the ball exceptionally well. And they ran the ball with great physicality, right? We talked about this a little bit on the Monday show, bringing it up again more seriously here on the Tuesday show. Wisniewski was in at left guard against the Falcons, because remember, there was, again, last year, a little bit of a rotation around left guard, the interior offensive line, again, for Philadelphia. And they ran, they had Ryan Matthews had an incredible day against the Falcons.
109 yards, two touchdowns, yeah.
Yeah, right, which I distinctly remember the Eagles had an opening drive, one of the first couple drives of the game, 5 minutes long, over 5 minutes it was, and Ryan Matthews just powered the whole thing. We're just talking 4 or 5 yard runs down the throat, right? And then he finished it off with a touchdown run, and it kind of set the tone there for that game. You saw a lot of, you know, you've seen a lot this year from Philadelphia, a lot of movement style of runs, right? Getting linemen out into space, right? They're very successful at doing this. You know, Kelsey, Wisniewski, great movers, and Lane Johnson as well. Not the biggest guys, but they're great movers. Then you have Brandon Brooks, who's huge and also a good mover in his own right, and so that's wonderful. The thing is that works well against slower and sometimes heavier defensive linemen. You don't want to run directly down their throats. You want to move it around. For Atlanta, you have a different situation. They got, you know, a more modern style of defense with Deion Jones, you know, with Keanu Neal, with Grady Jarrett in that kind of interior of the line there, the interior of the defense, I should say, and they're smaller, right? And so you don't necessarily want to go try to catch them in space. That's difficult to do. I don't know if you remember, Mike, there's an insane Keanu Neal play where he tackled Brent Celek on a screen that would have been a touchdown against the Falcons last year. You remember this? Where Jason Kelsey like buried him. Like Jason Kelsey, like two hands on him, chucked him. And like Jason Peters. And Neal's like kind of bounced off the floor and like tackled Brent Celek. And it was unbelievable, right? Just incredibly like pliable, flexible, great athlete. And so what Philadelphia did a lot against Atlanta, which you can anticipate a lot in this game, is more physical style of runs, inside zone, keep everything in the box, a little bit more power situation. Let's pull Brandon Brooks, let's run behind him, and here we go, right? Mm-hmm. They'll still run their outside zone, offense is predicated on it. They'll still run wham, and they'll get you moving in different directions, split zone, they'll work Zach Ertz across the formation, all the usual stuff, and they should. But I think you'll find that Philadelphia is quite successful with LeGarrette Blount down the middle in this game. I like Jay Ajayi as my, like, kind of my eagle for the playoffs. You know, he's going to be a key part. I think he plays a big part in this game as well. But LeGarrette Blount, low-key, has a very important role coming here against the Falcons. You'll see them look to establish a downhill run early. At least they should. It worked against Atlanta last year, number one. And number two, you're going to take the edge off of Nick Foles right away. And that's exactly what you want to do. You want to keep him calm coming in. And so from the opposite side, from the Eagles side, that's what I expect to see.
Yeah, I mean, I would love to see a wham play where Kelsey gets up on Deion Jones and just neutralize his speed, take advantage of their smaller linebackers, get up to the second level, get downhill. I totally agree with you there. And we have a couple of wham breakdowns over on LockedOnEagles.com. Ben did one. Yeah, I did one. We love the wham play here in Philadelphia.
Yeah, two breakdowns for a good play.
I can't beat that. All right, last thing before we go, and I watch this football game that Ben will not be privy to. The Eagles are set to play either the Jaguars or the Titans in London next year. The official announcement will happen on Thursday. On the plus side, both teams are scheduled for the Eagles as road games, so Philadelphia will not lose a home game. Ben, I hate London games. They should be sent to the pit of misery. Do you agree?
I like London games as a better because I'll tell you this.
It's a better, okay.
I'm not sure exactly what it is. I don't have my notes. London and then a bye afterward and then their next game, you take them against the spread. they always get bad spread points because they came off of London, but they had a bye in between, and they almost always win. I'm pretty sure that's it. I'll check my notes afterward. But anyway, yeah, no, London games from a fan perspective, from an analyst perspective, suck. And absolutely, those are very frustrating. It will be, like, kind of fun, you know. Obviously, there are a couple of good guys who I know, like Liam Jenkins of Philadelphia Sports Network, who he's out in London. Johnny Page, our boy, friend of the podcast. He does the Birds Breakdown podcast, writes for Bleeding Green Nation. These are Eagle fans stationed in London, and how exciting it has to be for them to be able to go out and see a game. And so that's a wonderful thing. You know, you focus on the positives with that. But yeah, it'll be difficult. Eagles have avoided it for this long. I think the opponent is one I'm more interested in seeing, because Titans out in London, okay, I'm fine. Jaguars out in London, they've been the team that's out there the most. They have the biggest fan base in London for sure. And then also, they're the Jaguars and they're good. That would be less great. Does this count as a home game for Philly or a road game?
It would be a road game.
It'd be a road game?
So we don't lose a home game. Yeah.
Yeah, so you're playing a road game on a neutral site. So that's a little bit of an advantage, you know. Either way, the devil was coming. The Eagles have to do it at some point. They're one of the last four teams to ever do it, right? Like, we've outlasted the field, man. So it's all right, you know. Our chickens have come home to roost.
All right, Ben, let the gentle listeners know what we got going on for the rest of the week, because we have an exciting slate of guests.
Yes, we do, and I got to make sure I don't mess these guests up. It is Tuesday. Thank you so much for listening to the Locked On Eagles podcast. As always, I've been Benjamin Solak, at Benjamin Solak on Twitter. That's been Michael Kist, at Michael Kist NFL on Twitter. You know he knows football because of the NFL and his Twitter name. Please, as always, leave a 5-star rating and also leave a review. I know sometimes I say a 5-star review and a rating, and that's wrong. 5-star rating and review on whatever app you listen to your podcasts. We now have 3 1-star ratings. Please stop doing that. I don't know who thinks that's funny. Very unacceptable. But 65 5-stars, that's a good deal. As always, an open door policy here at Locked On Eagles. If you have anything you want us to talk about, any questions, always hit us up on Twitter, whatever. On Wednesday, the crossover on the Locked On Network, that's Aaron Freeman of Locked On Falcons. It'll be just a round table. We'll be asking him some Falcons questions. He'll ask us some Eagles questions. We'll get ready for this matchup. Then on Thursday, that's guest numero dos. That's number two in Spanish, Mike, in case you're wondering. That's Eric Robinson. He writes for the Falcoholic. He's a Scouting Academy buddy of Mike's. And so he'll be able to give us a more specific player sort of perspective for Philadelphia and for Atlanta, because he has that player personnel background, which is really quite wonderful. So we're excited to be bringing in two guests for you guys. It's the playoffs. We got to go above and beyond. Friday, as always, the preview show getting ready. Playoff season, baby. It's going to be a fun one.
Keep it locked on here on Locked On Eagles. Fly, Eagles, fly.
Caw-caw! I want to give a healthier caw this time.
That was nice.
Last time it was bad. Yeah, it was good.